Goody, what's goody? I'm your host, Jay Smooth, and welcome to The Life Unexamined Is Not Worth Living, and we are on episode 8, keeping it 100. Now, before I get started, you all can find me on Spotify and Apple, and there all of y'all can follow and subscribe to my podcast. Also, I ask that you please take the time out to leave me both a rating and a review. Follow me on IG at the_life_unexamined_podcast. And there I'll be sharing some video content of me discussing various topics that I talk about on my episodes during the week. And I'll also be sharing my words of the day to keep y'all actively thinking. And please visit my website, examineourlives.com, where you can find information about my podcast, information about myself. You can find information about guests that I have on my episodes. I have some blogs that I'm putting together as well. And if you want to reach out to me, you can hit me up on my website. Any suggestions, feedback, any questions that you may have, please don't hesitate to ask. And if it makes it easier for y'all, you can also leave me a voice message on my website. And who knows? I may end up playing a message on one of my episodes, with your consent, of course. All right, so let's get back to business. Now, this next guest that I have is special and near dear to my heart. He's been in my life from when I was younger, and I spoke about him briefly on episode 2 of my podcast. My father was not in my life, but this man was a father figure to me and was with my mother for a few years. They got married. It didn't last long, but he did have a positive influence, pardon me, in my life. But after he and my moms had separated, he was in a different relationship with somebody, and he introduced me to the woman that he's married to today. And I was like 14 years old, and at that time I was just saying to myself, yo, I got my moms, and this woman that you're trying to introduce me to, I don't really care for all of that. I'm good. So over the years, we didn't have that much contact. We did speak from time to time, but it wasn't the same as what it was before. But recently, after my grandmother had passed away, he and I got close again, and I'm just grateful to have him in my life and somebody that I consider family. So without further ado, I would like to introduce Brian Gray. Thank you for being on my podcast.
It's an honor, bro, and to have the blessing of watching you from a child to evolve into the man you become is a true blessing, man. And you never know what kind of impact you have on a person until sometimes years later, and sometimes they may or may not express to you what kind of impact you had. So the fact that you are doing that and that we're blessed to be in communication with each other is a true honor, man, to be here and be able to speak on your behalf and promote and support what you're doing, because you're doing great work. So continue what you're doing, man, and you're going to be unstoppable, man, because you're making a positive impact in the world, you know, and it's going to last long after you and I are both gone. It's going to last, and that's what you want to do in this world, is leave a mark and a legacy. So that's what we all need to be striving towards. So I'll give you a quick summary for your fans and your people that don't know me. You know, I come from New York City, born in Harlem, raised in Brooklyn, single mom. You know, I had a father, obviously, that's how I got here, but he was not really a part of my life. So he had a second family somewhere in Queens. And I grew up under a mother who was strong. She had to be the mother and the father, the nurturer and a disciplinarian. And so I was blessed to have a strong mother that I had. And she helped guide me and gave me foundation that I have and that I was able to work on and build from. And from there, I had the fortune and blessing to have older sisters who chose good men to be in their lives. And so that was a benefit to me as well, because these guys took me as a little brother and put me on to different things in life and how to navigate through things. And they gave me more or less an example of what a man is supposed to look like. So I did have that, and I had good people around me. I grew up born in 69, grew up in the 70s in New York City. So in the inner city communities, I had the fortune of being in an environment where it was a village, and everyone was looking out for each other, each other's families. So I had older men that was in the streets. They could, they were in the street game. Some of them weren't, but they would be like, yo, I'm shorty, check it. This is what you need to be doing. And they would always try to keep us at my group age going, moving in the right direction. So I had many, many, many blessings. And I actually had to experience many, many trials, tribulations, struggles, and tragedies. So I take those things and I combine it all into like a gumbo pot. Like what they say in the war is a pot of gumbo. And that's all mixed in with my experience. And it's all a part of me becoming the man that I am today, sitting here today. So that's a little bit of my background.
Nah, thank you for that. Thank you for that. So, yeah, you said that you grew up in Brooklyn. And if I'm not mistaken, you grew up in Bed-Stuy, right? So,
right.
I mean, you grew up in the hood. So
yeah.
Talk about how that was like. Like, how was it like growing up in that type of neighborhood and seeing the things that you see?
Well, I'll tell you what, it was, to me at that time, it was a blessing, because before I moved to Brooklyn, I was in the third grade when I moved to Brooklyn. Third grade, so I'm around 8. So when I was in Manhattan, born in Harlem, I remember living on 112th Street between Broadway and Amsterdam. Couldn't come outside because it was not safe. Then from there, we moved up to 155th between Broadway and Amsterdam. That's when the Dominicans was coming in heavy into New York City.
Right.
Couldn't go outside. School and back, and that's it. Dangerous. Then we went up to 160th between Broadway and Amsterdam. Couldn't come outside. Wasn't safe. My mother had a boyfriend that lived in Brooklyn. He and his sister owned a brownstone. And we would go visit them before I moved to Brooklyn. And it was kids on the block that we could play together. And I had mad fun. So when my mother told me we were actually moving there, I was happy. I was excited. Again, a dangerous neighborhood where it was guns and shooting, mad violence all around. But we felt like we had our own like little bubble on our one block. And that was on Madison Street between Tompkins and Troop. And we had a crew that was tight. We had an abandoned brownstone that we made into our clubhouse. So I didn't get to experience that in Manhattan. So that's when I felt like, wow, this is what a real childhood is supposed to feel like. So I had friends, but we would mainly stay on our block. It was an adventure for us to go down to a corner where the Arab store was, and excuse my terminology, maybe that's not appropriate now, but we used to call them the Arabs. So Middle Eastern guys, they owned the bodega.
Yeah, the Arab store, Habibi store, the bodega. Yeah, I know. They had the video games, chips, candy, juice, sandwiches, all of that.
And so it was like I felt like it was heaven, you know, but we would see crime scenes, bodies drop, and we look at it, but it was normal to us. That sounds crazy, but we were like, oh, yo, homeboy got shot. We see the body bags, zipped up, cops, but that's the era that it was back then, and that's what we grew up in. And a lot of my elders in our neighborhood, we seen them go, they went upstate and I never saw them again. So whatever things they were involved in or what they were doing, but they always made a point to say, yo, y'all little homies, man, y'all want to get involved with this and this and that. It was love. It was real love, man. But it was territorial rivalries when we would step off and move through other blocks. Everybody's like, yo, you don't live on this block. What you doing over here? And so that's when things got nuts. And we would go up to my local elementary school where the basketball courts was, and dudes would be coming from different blocks, not knowing each other. And it was very territorial, very tribal. And that's where the problems would jump off. So I appreciate all of it, man. The good, the bad, the ugly. You know what I mean? And it helped shape me into who I am. And it allowed me to have a perspective that a lot of people don't have. So now, later on, fast forward, as I became an adult, I went to the military, I went to college, and then I ended up eventually in law enforcement. So now, because now I'm in law enforcement, it gave me a perspective that a lot of my fellow colleagues didn't have, because I was dropped right into the hood back, and now I'm in Brownsville, policing the streets of Brownsville, surrounded by projects, nothing but gunshots, murder, drug sales. But I had a different perspective because it was something I was always used to growing up, seeing it. knowing the people that was involved with that stuff. So I was able to communicate with them differently, and in my opinion, more effectively than other police officers that maybe were Caucasian, that came from the suburbs, and maybe even some of the African-American officers, the Hispanic officers that wasn't necessarily from that type of hood. So they would actually look to me and like, yo, man, I like how you did this or that, how you talk to this guy. And I was like, almost like, in my opinion, a calming force. When interactions would get a little bit heated, I would come in and be that calming voice. And it got to a point where the cats on the street would say, yo, great, man. Yo, mad respect to you. And not that I'm doing anything for them, not that I'm letting them get away with anything. It's just how I'm handling it. It's more of from a level of respect and understanding of like, bro, I understand what you're doing. It's not a good choice you're making, but here's some options that you could consider. And not trying to tell these guys and school these guys and like I'm the grandmaster, know-it-all, but just giving them other points of view to say, hey, man, you do have some other choices you could be making. I know things are rough out here, but, you know, you have other options. And, you know, just to put a little seed in someone's head. And who knows what kind of impact that had. I don't have any contact with these people anymore, but hopefully whatever I did out there in the streets, it had some type of positive impact. I believe it probably did.
I wanted to stop you right there because something that you said that was very interesting, you said that when you used to go to the neighborhoods, and that's what happens a lot of times anyway, they put you right back where you came from. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And they want you to police those streets. Mm-hmm. But the thing that stood out to me was you didn't just view it as, well, I'm policing the streets and I'm just trying to lock these guys up and I'm just trying to, you know, provoke them and just get them, you know, get them incarcerated, put them in the system, which is not a system that's built for rehabilitation anyway, which I'm pretty sure that you know that, right? So
right. You
were actually trying to talk to these guys and have a real conversation with them and help them. And like you said, you would come at it from a different perspective because you came from that. So you're looking out for these guys and trying to help them in a positive way and not just harass them. We're not saying that they're not involved in illegal activity and all of that. We're not saying that. But there's a lot of people that's involved in illegal activity that's white collar crime, right? And that's not just like crimes in the street, but that's the way that it is portrayed to us. But getting back to my point, you always kept it 100. You stayed true to who you were. And when you said that foundation that you had from the beginning of you seeing all the stuff that you saw, the good and the bad, that made you become who you are, and you carry that even being a police officer and trying to help these people. So I think that that's very key and very, very important.
Yeah. And then one thing too that I didn't actually mention is what helped me was I was exposed to the 5% Nation and the Nation of Islam as a youth as well. So under the study of the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, I started to understand the dynamics of society on a whole and how systems work and how systems are designed to put certain people at a disadvantage and some at an advantage. So I'm coming at it from that perspective as well. And so that allowed me to really look at things even differently than maybe another black officer would even, who didn't have that background or experience. So I understand the system and what the odds are when they're stacked against us, especially as young black males. So I'm always coming at it from that perspective where, listen, man, you have been set up for failure. And that is a 100,000% fact. We are set up for failure in this society, in this system. There's no bones about it. There's nothing to debate. So we know that. And if you do understand that, now you can approach things differently. And that was part of the perspective that I used to bring to these guys. Like, listen, man, I understand everything you're dealing with because I came from the same world. But if you understand that it's been by design to put you in this situation, if you continue to perpetuate it, now you're a part of it.
100%.
You know, there's no rocket science to it, man. It's just a matter of having that understanding. But once you come into an awakening, they call it woke now, but I call it having knowledge of self. Knowing your true history, your true legacy is what kind of people you come from, what you guys have, your generations before you have accomplished and how they have lived with dignity, honor, respect. Once you know that that's what you come from, you're like, yo, what am I doing now? Why am I doing the opposite of that? That doesn't make any sense. So that's the way I have always lived my life. And that's something my mother taught me without knowing she was teaching me that. Just the way she carried herself. And she didn't have all of this knowledge. She just carried herself with dignity. And she told us, I don't care how poor we are. I don't care what you don't have. What you always can have is dignity and respect and honor. We were poor, and people thought we came from middle to upper middle class backgrounds because we would go out in the world and interact with people intelligently.
Right.
But they're like, wait, you from where? I thought you was from like Cosby Huxtable type of environment. No, only 100% opposite. But it's the way we carried ourselves. And that was came from my mother and then the other teachers that I got from guys on the street that had knowledge itself. And that's really made a tremendous difference in my life.
And it's funny that you said that they thought the child came from money, and that couldn't be any further from the truth, because I know that you did not come from money at all. But it's funny because I always say that it's about being true to who you are no matter what. So like you say, you could come from where you come from. You could speak with a certain dialect, but that doesn't mean that you're not intelligent. That doesn't mean that you're not able to articulate yourself well.
Right.
And I get a little bit annoyed sometimes too. And it's all good because everybody could do whatever they want. It's your preference. But me personally, I can't stand how people do like the code switching thing. That's like a pet peeve of mine. I believe that you should be who you are no matter where you are. Like I said before, you can articulate yourself well and still speak naturally how you speak.
Right.
It doesn't have to be this thing where, oh, I'm around these types of people, so I can't speak this way. I'm around those types of people, so I can't speak that way. That's basura. It's trash, B. You know what I'm saying? But I say all that to say, it's dope that you stay true to who you are. And that's what my podcast is about, being your 100% true self and being authentic. So I appreciate you sharing that.
100%. Absolutely, man. That's why I said it's an honor, and it's a blessing to be able to share my story, because I don't reach people on a wide base from a large platform. I reach people based on my personal interactions with them. So what you're doing here, you're going to reach a much wider base, a much larger audience. And even to think of having me on your platform where I can share my story that could reach a wider circle than what I would normally reach on my own personal level, that's huge, man.
Right.
And if it benefits someone, you know, it's a blessing, man. You're a vessel, man, for change, man. And you know, with your generation, you know, I was very worried about the young brothers in your age group, man, from based on what I see. And I don't see a lot of good things coming from them. But when I look at you and certain other young cats that I run into, it gives me hope, man, for the future. Because now I'm considered, honestly, I'm not old, but I'm elder. So I'm like, yo, bro, who's going to take the baton or pass? Who are we passing the torch to? Because, you know, we're only here for a certain amount of time. And I have two young sons, and, you know, I'm doing what I can to keep them on track with what they need to be doing. But there's a middle gap in between that, which is your era. And so when I see brothers like you doing what you're doing, it gives me hope and inspiration. And if there's anything I can do to support that, I'm here 100%.
Nah, thank you, thank you, thank you. Salute, for sure, for sure. You know, I'm just trying to move around like a king. And a lot of my, I don't know how I want to say this. A lot of people in my age group, they want to be called kings. And women want to be called queens, but they move around like children. And they don't know what it means to be a king. They don't know what it means to move with purpose and to affect people in a positive way. And there's a lot of ignorance out there, and a lot of people that we look at as leaders are not leaders. And naturally, I'm a leader anyway. I'm not a sheep, so I don't believe in the herd mentality. I'm an independent thinker mixed with a little bit of contrarian. I ain't gonna lie. And quite honestly, we don't need leaders. We can lead ourselves, you know, but we could work together as a community and lead together. but it's just a lot of following mentality, and it's just not a lot of positive energy that's being put out there. So no, thank you. I appreciate that. And I'm just trying to do my part in trying to help as many people as possible. And the younger generation is what's most important, you know, because they come after us. Before we get there, though, because I do want to talk about that a little bit more, but before we get there, I did want to talk to you more about you moving up within the ranks of your department, being a police officer. I know that you had different roles throughout the years. Through the years, did you find it harder to move up? And I'm not saying harder because the work was difficult. Nah, I'm not saying that. I'm saying harder and more difficult based on the politics, having to kiss people's behind, and having to compromise who you were as a person. Did you experience that?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. And, you know, people say, a lot of people talk about the cliche, you got to change things from the inside. You got to get on the inside in order for you to make a change or make a difference. And I beg to differ on that point. And the reason I do is because I was on the inside. And what I realize is that as you move or attempt to move through the ranks to higher positions, you have to be knighted. They have to tap you and say, yeah, this guy is good. In order for them to do that, you have to show and prove to them that you are going to perpetuate the system that's already in place, that's already established. Now, if you like that system, or if you don't care about the system, whether it's right or wrong, effective or ineffective, and you're in it just for your own personal interests or benefit, then yeah, you play the game and you go move up and get knighted and say, hey, listen, we want this amount of arrest. We don't care what it is, what it's for, but if you show us the stats, then that's going to be a good reflection on you, and you're going to be considered for promotion. We want to rise up the ranks. Now, one of the issues that I have with police work in NYPD specifically is that they evaluate an officer based on how many arrests they make, how many summons they make.
Right. Yeah, you're talking about quotas.
Yeah, so there is such a thing as quotas, no matter what they tell you in the public. And it doesn't matter necessarily the quality of the arrest, the quality or legitimacy of the summons, as you write. They just want the numbers because this is how they can quantify that police work is being done.
Yeah, which is a fallacy in itself, but the system is what it is. But continue breaking down that science.
So you can have an officer that he might come in with 3 or 4 arrests for the month, but they're good, solid quality arrests. And he could have had multiple interactions with people where he's used his discretion not to arrest someone because it was a domestic issue or something that could have been resolved without an arrest, to keep the family and to actually keep the community in a better state where, listen, we're here not just to lock everybody up. Let's understand the circumstances in each particular situation. Whereas you could have another officer, he's just any offense, he's locking everybody up. So he's got 20 arrests for the month. You have 3 or 4. You look like a bum. This guy looks like a superstar. But how is he managing his interactions? So this is the way they analyze and reward you. So for me, that's a flawed system, right? Just sort of fundamentally, that's flawed in evaluating an officer's effectiveness or his quality of work. So that's the main issue that I had. I'm like, listen, I'm not here to just make numbers and make the supervisors look good and make myself look good so I can get opportunities for promotion and things like that. That's not how I do it. So that in itself was what you talk about, staying true to yourself. I'm here to make a difference in the actual community and people's lives. And if that benefits me, that's great. If it doesn't, I don't care.
Absolutely. And you're spot on, because making arrests doesn't mean that you're actually making a difference in the community. That's a fallacy. And there is a time and a place to make arrests, 100%. But I've always had the mindset that we need to focus more on the types of services, programs, opportunities, leadership. Those are the things that's most important in the neighborhoods. Do we have that? Because if not, then the root of the problems in the communities will never be addressed. And with all that being said, I believe that many of us, and especially minority communities, need to learn how to police ourselves. And the system has purposefully perpetuated our views on cops. That's by design. Yo, F the cops. They harass us. All they do is come through and they just want to make trouble with us. Yeah, there's validity to that, but y'all are also doing the things that y'all are doing too. You know what I mean? And yes, there's a reason why y'all are doing that. And there's a reason why you act like that and you grow up impoverished and drugs were put in your neighborhood, guns were put in your neighborhood. I get that. I understand that. I'm not oblivious to that.
Absolutely.
But at some point in time, like, we got to look within ourselves and our community and say, enough of that. Like, enough of that. And we can police ourselves and we don't need these people to come here and telling us what to do and all of that, you know, because they don't have our best interests at heart anyway. We have to have our best interests at heart.
No, that's 100% facts, man. And that's some of the things that I used to tell these guys when I would interact with them. I'm like, if you don't like the police, then don't give the police a reason to have to be here. Every time I come to show up at a call is because a call came through 911. Somebody called. For some reason, whatever it is, if it's drug sales, shooting, or an assault, that's me responding, okay? Now, and I used to tell guys, you could buy a police scanner from Radio Shack, just listen, monitor the radio. You could put it on the channels in Chinatown. You could go to the Italian neighborhoods where those precincts are. You can go to the Russian neighborhoods and listen to the radio activity. And you'll go to sleep because you won't hear much of it. Right? Now you go to the Bronx, put on the Harlem Channel, Brooklyn, Bed-Stuy, Brownsville, East New York. It's constant chatter. Male black with a gun. Male black drug sales. Five male blacks on the corner. Picking in Livonia, whatever. So you hear the activity. And that's the need for the police to respond. So I'm like, if you don't want the police bothering you, all you have to do is police yourselves and clean up your own neighborhood.
100%.
So you can do that. They're going to have to show up and do the job that you're not able to do. And you're not going to like how they do it. So you're better off trying to do it yourself.
Agreed.
And I would say exactly that to these guys. And then the other thing about it, and I get it too, the no snitching and this and that. Okay. I get that because you still have to live here. I go home. If somebody finds out you're talking about this and that to the police, you're going to have a problem.
Oh, yeah. It's a rep.
It's a weird dynamic, man. But I understand it and I'm sympathetic to it. But at the same time, I'm asking each person as an individual, what are you doing to not be a part of the problem or to help find a solution? You got to ask yourself. We all have to ask ourselves that. I have problems. I struggle with things to this day, but I have to always ask myself, what am I doing to solve this problem? And if I haven't found the answer, then that means that's on me. And I tell everybody that I talk to, man, you have to be responsible for you and what you do. And if you see something that you don't like, that you're just complaining about, but you're not being proactive about finding a solution, then you don't have a right to complain. And you just got to live with it and take the results and eat it. You know, so it's just a matter-of-fact approach that I take to life. And I brought that into policing. I bring it into everything I do. You know, and so to me, in my opinion, I think it was effective because other officers around me, including white officers from the suburbs, they would say, hey, man, how did you get this guy to comply with you? Because I treated him with respect. I talked to him like a human being. I didn't look at him like he's a piece of garbage. You know what I mean? That's all it is. Well, but if you don't understand what that is, or how to do that, because somebody looks different, they have a lower economic situation than you do, and you're thinking you're looking down on somebody, you're never going to gain their respect. They're going to look at you as an enemy and an outsider, and you're always going to have a conflict. You know? And that's the difference in the way I approach that. I had a good time doing police work, man. It wasn't the worst part for me in policing was the bureaucracy of it. I had more problems internally within my own department than I have being on the streets with criminals and gangsters.
Let's pause right there. So yeah. It's funny that you say that, right? Because on the outside looking in, somebody would say, man, y'all got to deal with all of this craziness outside and all these people out there and killings and the shootings and the drugs and prostitution, whatever, right? Like, that's the way that people look at it from the outside. But you just said that, oh, nah, it was the inside. That's what killed me. That's what bothered me. That's really intriguing. And I already have a very good idea on why that is, but expound upon that.
Well, once again, when you don't do things the way the system is designed for you to do it, meaning to write the most amount of summonses, make the most amount of arrests, to make supervision and the hierarchy look good so that they could get promoted or they could, you know, get whatever rewards or accolades they're looking for, you basically put on a target on your back. You're like, oh, he's not playing the game. And once you have that target on your back, people will do things to undermine you. And it happened to me. And to give you an even deeper look into it, I spent time as an internal affairs investigator. So I was investigating police corruption. So even from that perspective, because a lot of people in the public make false allegations. So I would have to determine whether this was valid or not. And I would do thorough investigations. And if it was valid, we did what we had to do. I have actually locked up police officers for criminal activity. Well, if there's something where a complaint is being made and it's found out that the complainant is not credible and they're just making something up as a retaliatory type of thing, I would move to exonerate the police officer. Not just leave with an unfounded case where, well, we couldn't prove it or we couldn't disprove it. I would go to extra mile and say, no, this officer needs to be exonerated and this needs to be expunged from his record or either be on his record as he's completely exonerated from any misconduct. My own department wouldn't allow me to do that. They made it very difficult for me to do that. And what they would do in addition to that was, okay, well, let's find some administrative violations then if we don't have anything else on them. So this is what I talk about, the bureaucracy. It was very distasteful to see on the inside. This is how they're dealing with their own officers. But if you're at a certain level in rank, which meaning captain or above, that's where the blue wall still exists, where you're more protected. And it's almost like I compare it to the mafia, honestly. It's like once you hit capo status, you're in a different league where you protect.
Right.
You can't touch a capo. So captains and above, a whole different unit investigates them anyway. But that's where, to me, the higher levels of corruption still exist. But the rank and file, basic police officers, I mean, it's so much different now. You can't get away with things the way you used to. Everybody's wearing body cameras now. So it's very hard to get away with that street level type of corruption and misconduct. It really is. And that's a great thing, honestly. You know, but it still exists. So for me, the bureaucracy of it, the politics of it, it was the worst experience in my time with the NYPD. I had a bad experience just being left alone, going out on the street, interacting with the public. I had a better time doing that.
Right. And because of that, I'm pretty sure that you left money on the table, and I'm pretty sure that that had an effect on you moving up within the ranks, and all because of your integrity, your character, your core values, what you stand for, and who you are, which originated from your foundation.
Yeah. And, you know, actually being in internal affairs and seeing on the inside how that works, it kind of like soured me on police work, at least in that agency. And I actually retired early. You know, I retired about 5-6 years early, and I was moving into business ventures and things like that. So I went into that, and I said, man, this world is much bigger. I'm always a forward-thinking person, so I'm looking to maximize my experiences, my opportunities, and things like that. So I went into business for myself, did well for a little while. Then, you know, that started to tank it. Then I went into private security, did well with that, and full circle. I'm in Texas now. I left New York a couple of years ago, but I'm back into police work on a different level. But it's more of community policing. I'm in a college environment, you know, just protecting kids, protecting families. And that's what I wanted to always do. And the bureaucracy And what I'm doing now is non-existence. This is just about community policing. How can we serve the public in the best way possible? And that's what I love doing. That was my favorite part of policing anyway. So now I'm able to do that again.
And, you know, it's dope to hear that, because you went from having your experiences when you grew up and then using that, and that carried you when you were with the NYPD. And then you said, nah, like you said, it soured you. It was like, nah, I ain't trying to do that.
Yeah.
But then as you continue to age and you continue to grow, now you back to doing police work again, but it's back to the foundation that you had before, where you said, man, I enjoy being on the corners and talking to the brothers. Like, I enjoy teaching. I enjoy talking to them. You went back to that. And that's what's so dope, because that was your foundation. That's who you are. And everything always goes back to our foundation, who we are, our core values. So that's dope, man.
Yeah. And before I had this position, I spent time in Texas working in the jails, which I had never done before. I was just usually dropping people off and leaving. So I got about almost a year of experience working in the jails in Texas. And of course, it's mostly us there. But it was a mixture of European, Caucasians, Hispanic. And I got to interact with them on a day-to-day basis for 12 hours straight every day. And that was a great experience for me as well, because now I could see, and they would share stories with me and ask me opinions, my opinions or advice about certain things. And they would tell me their cases and what happened. And I would be able to talk to them even more interactively than when I was in the police on the street. And I'm like, wow, you know, these guys, man, they're all human beings. And I would always tell them, listen, I have done things in my life. I could have been right in here with you very easily. So I understand anybody can be in jail, man. Doesn't matter who you are, who you think you are. You could end up in jail. It's just a matter if you got caught or not. You know what I mean? And I was blessed somehow to have not been put in that situation. But again, because of my background, where I come from, what I've experienced, I can relate to people that are in that situation very easily. And they were like, yo, man, great, man. Listen, man, we got mad respect for you. So you don't let us get away with anything, or you're fair. You're fair, you're reasonable. If you can help us, you actually help us. Other officers don't. They don't even care. They don't look at us like we're nothing. And I've never taken that approach ever in life. Never, ever. And it served me well, you know, because there was a guy in Texas. He was locked up for capital murder. And I ran into him at a restaurant. So I guess he finally made bail. He came up to me. He's like, yo, man, I know you. I didn't recognize him.
Right.
He said, nah, man, did you work in, the jail? I said, yeah. He said, yeah, you were the guy, because he had a problem with one of the other officers, so they had to eject him from the cell block where he was at. So I had to come and get him out, and he made a statement that he was potentially was suicidal. So I had to take him to the infirmary, and we had to put him on suicide watch. I had to confiscate all his clothes, shoes, socks, everything. And I just talked to him and said, hey, listen, man, because you made that statement, this is what we got to do. But he said, man, you guys were cool, man. You treated me with respect. And now he's out on the street. I said, yo, what happened with your case? Nah, man, this case is still on me. I was just able to bond out. So I'm out on bond right now. But he said, I appreciate how you handled me. This is what a guy said to me in the street. I'm like, wow. And I used to get that in New York too, because guys would come up to me. And I don't remember these people, but they remembered me, because that was an experience for them that I have on a daily basis with all types of individuals.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, yo, great. You used to work in Charlottesville and Brownsville, right? Yeah. Yo, you was mad cool, man. Yo, much respect to you, man. You out here now. And I used to get that type of, I'm like, wow. So obviously I'm doing something that's okay, you know, because the way people are receiving me and responding to me, you know, it's like they respect what I do and how I do it. So I appreciate that, man.
Nah, for sure. You're a stand-up dude, 100%. And I can relate to having a long-lasting effect on people in the workplace and in life in general, and you're not even aware of it. Because I worked in corporate America, and I was a manager at JP Morgan Deutsche Bank, Capital One. And I would always have people say to me, you know, George, like, I really respect you. You're one of the few people that I've met that, you know, you keep it real all the time. Like, you're unapologetically you at all times, and you don't care. You don't kiss anybody's behind. You move you move to the beat of your own drum, and you truly do care about the people who work there, and you don't get sucked into all of the politics and all of that other BS. I would always say when I was at work, when people were saying like, oh, I'm so stressed out from work and I can't sleep at night. And I'm like, man, when I'm done with work, I'm done with work. I don't even think about work after that. Like, it's a paycheck for me. My career and what I do does not define me at all, you know, but that's just me. So I was actually able to move up in different companies pretty quickly. So I remember when I was working at JP Morgan, I was looking to get a job at another institution, and the director had given me a $15,000 raise. And this wasn't even during the time that we would get raises during the beginning of the year. They just didn't want me to leave. They wanted to keep me at that time. So I knew the game. I knew how it worked. And then eventually I moved from JP over to Deutsche Bank. And the same thing there. I just kept moving up. But I was able to do that because of my intellect and because of my work. But I always knew that my attitude and the fact that I'm not willing to compromise who I was going to put a cap on how high I can continue to move up. And I remember having an argument with my manager one day, and he says to me, you're really intelligent. You do really good work. You're a great manager, but you're too blunt. You speak your mind all the time, and that's going to get you in trouble. And I remember before I left Deutsche Bank to go to Capital One, he said to me, you know, if you want to keep moving up, you got to change who you are. And I remember I looked at him and I said, that's not going to happen. And I appreciate you telling me that, but that's not going to happen. I am always going to be who I am, and I'm not willing to compromise my integrity and my character for a title and for more money. That's never going to happen. And I realized that for me, I had way more gifts than working in corporate America and making money. Nah, I'm wasting what I have up here from an intellectual standpoint. And I just knew that that wasn't the right way for me to go. So I just wanted to bring that up because it just relates to what you were saying too, that you're not just trying to make as much money as possible and screw other people and not try to make a difference. It's like, come on, man. Like, we work in these places and these corporations and businesses because they're all businesses. They make money. And we just make money for the shareholders. Like, that's just what it is. And I'm tired of that. I'm tired of putting money in other people's pockets. And there's a ton of corruption that occurs in corporate America. Same thing with the police force. People are just corrupt, yo. And the more money some people make, the more they can get away with, and the greedier they become. Gotta love capitalism, right?
100%. And I never felt comfortable receiving monetary gain, something that I didn't like doing, or that I knew wasn't 100% legit. That doesn't work for me. And so even when I went into business, I went into business with a solid product, a solid service that I knew was beneficial. And if it wasn't that, I'm not going to sell it. I'm not going to promote it. I'm not going to represent it as something that it's not. I just can't do it, man. And for me, personal integrity is everything.
Absolutely.
And guess what? I've been successful financially pretty well. You know, my family and I were pretty well off, man. But taking that approach, I'm still blessed, man. You know, and so I can tell someone, you can do things the right way and still be rewarded monetarily. There's nothing wrong with making money, but I have to be comfortable with how I'm doing it and know that I'm providing a valuable service or a valuable product. I have to know that. And if I'm not doing that, I can't take it. You know what I mean? I'll give you your money. Because I've had issues where people were like, oh, your product, this and that. I say, you know what? I will refund your money. And this has been a lot of money. I'm like, no, if you're not happy, I don't want you to walk away unhappy. Because there was a gentleman who said, he said, I don't want your business, I want your trust. And if me getting your business means you don't trust me, you don't feel good about the exchange, that's not what I'm looking for. You know what I mean? And I'm like, wow, that's powerful. Because guess what? At the end of the day, when the person walks away, if they don't feel good about an exchange, you don't have a repeat customer anyway. And guess what? If someone asks them about you, well, I didn't have a good experience. This product wasn't what I thought. And I didn't get my money back. I don't want to walk away with someone having to be able to say that about me.
Agreed.
Well, this guy treated me like this when he locked me up. I bought guys sodas, potato chips, pizza. Got I arrested for criminal stuff. It's all good. And I had to fight with you to get you on cuffs. But now it's over. Yo, you want something to drink? Oh, snap. Yeah, man. Actually, yeah. And I'll get it because it's not personal, man. We just did a business transaction. You're in jail now. I'm not mad at you, man. You don't want to go. I get that. But you had to come with me. So however we got to here, I'm not mad. And for me, that made it easier for me. Because now it's like, okay, now the dude is cool. He's not giving me more problems in jail. He's not making a ruckus or this and that. Because now, just me showing him that I'm treating you like a human is making the rest of the interaction go more smoothly. And for the next guy that might transport him somewhere else. And I've had dudes come back. Yo, great. Guy from a hip-hop group. It was a sub-affiliate of Wu-Tang, Sons of Man. He comes in with all these CDs and promo tape. Yo, great. Show me love, man. So when boom, dropped this at the precinct. Yeah, nah, man. You show love, man. Appreciate it. Boom, boom, boom. This is what he did. I'm not looking for that. Man, I just want to have a positive interaction. We can make a negative situation a little bit better by treating each other with respect, right? And that's all it is, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have to know that I'm doing things with integrity, purpose, and everyone is going to have a positive outcome.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So now I want to pivot over to your family. I know you have two sons. And my question to you is, what is the message that you have for them? And let's say years down the road, when you look at them, what would make you proud as a father?
Very good question. Once again, excellent question. And it's not about whatever career they're in, how much money they have. I want them to be happy with themselves, proud of who they are. And I want them to be able to walk through the world with confidence in who they are. And I want them to have no intimidation of anyone outside of them, knowing that they can compete with anybody in this world and that they can stand on their own two feet and they can take care of themselves. And if they choose to have a family, they can take care of their families and at the same time treat people with honesty, integrity, respect. If they're doing that 10 to 15 years, I don't care what venue it is. It could be garbage man. It could be an engineer. I don't care. It doesn't matter. They have that type of character and integrity and dignity and pride within themselves. My man, that's what I'm looking for. That's it.
That's dope. That's dope. I mean, that's everything that I talk about on my podcast on a daily basis. I mean, about loving yourself, knowing who you are, establishing that foundation, and basically leaving your mark on this earth before you die. You know, like that's what I'm big on. And I look at you and I look at your life and the service that you've given to people in general, it's a blessing and it's humbling. It's very humbling when you have the people come back to you and talk to you and say, "Yo, you know what, Gray, like you helped me out, man. Like I appreciate that." That's dope.
It really is, man.
And when I'm doing this, I'm not doing it for the reasons of getting anything in return because I don't care about that. But when you do get that in return, when you do have people have conversations with you and tell you, "Yo, when you said this to me, like that really helped me," it makes you feel good. It makes you feel great. I always say that if you're able to help one person, then that's enough. Then that's enough, man. Like it's worth it. If you're able to help one person out of millions, it's worth it, yo.
Yeah.
Because that one person could change their life and be influent. Yo, I can't even enunciate right now. That one person can be influential to many others. Hundreds, thousands, millions. You never know. It's about, like I spoke about earlier, the next generation and building a foundation for that generation. And then they build a foundation, and then it's the next generation, the next generation, the next generation. That's what it's about, man.
Yeah. As I gain more wisdom, just from life experience and study, self-examination, life unexamined, like your podcast. No, I realized that, man, everybody pretty much, we all want the same thing in life, right? The people who are in their right mind who are saying, we all want the same things. We want, you know, life, liberty, freedom. That's what we want, right? And so I'm starting less and less to see people in the world as separate individuals. I met a lady in my current position that I'm in now. She lived in New York for a good amount of years, but she's from, I think, Afghanistan, some Middle Eastern country, I can't remember. But I'm talking to her, and she's like, she has a daughter who's doing some great things at college, studying microbiology or something. And she has a son about to go to college. So we're talking, and I'm realizing, like, she's from another side of the world. She has two children. I have two children. All our goals and values are exactly the same. And what we want for our children, what we want for our families. You know, we look at ourselves as individuals, but to me, I think the human race, we really are all one. And I think the trick of these masterminds is to really keep everyone thinking that we are separate and divided, and that we have to be worried about each other, defensive towards each other, and that's how they continue to rule us. So you know what I mean? So once we realize, man, we all stand as one, and I'm not talking about any race or religion. I'm talking about everybody. We all want the same thing in life, ultimately, right? So that's the way I kind of look at things more. And the more you get down to the essence of what a person is, it's no different from you.
No, I agree with that. And I'm very big on what you just said. A lot of what goes on in the world, the interferences, the social media, TV, politics, left, right, Republican, Democrat, all of that stuff is just made to divide us.
Exactly.
That's what it's about. And then there's those that are like the 1% and who are controlling everything. Like, they want to just keep us at odds because they know the power of what you just said. And it all makes me think about this movie called They Live. John Carpenter produced it, and Roddy Piper is in it, the wrestler from back in the day. The acting is not that great, but the message is. And there's these glasses that he finds, and when he puts the glasses on, he sees the world for what it really is. He sees the 1%, the people who control the world, the wealthy, and they're really aliens. And then when he looks outside and he looks at the buildings, you see signs like obey, watch television, buy, conform, yield, consume, stay asleep, work. I mean, you get the gist of it. But that really is how this world is. And that movie was always dope to me. And every few years I watch it, and there's so much imagery and meaning behind it because it all relates to our everyday life and us just going through the motions and continuing to bicker with each other and not building with each other, not loving one another, and building a strong force together. We're a big community, but we don't live like a big community. We live trying to compete with each other, wanting to fight with each other. You know what I'm saying? Trying to outdo this person.
Right.
You know what I mean? We're programmed to be destructive. We're programmed to not love ourselves. And it's sad, but it's our job to become independent thinkers and deprogram ourselves, come together as one, and overcome all of those interferences. The work that I'm doing and the work that a lot of other people are doing, that's the hope. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just me. There's millions of people that do the stuff that I'm doing, right? But there's hope there. And I just try to be a part of a solution and not just a person that complains and, you know, just sits back and says, oh, this world is so terrible. And oh, and this and that. These people are doing that. It's like, all right, so if you think that, then do something about it. But if you don't want to do something about it, that's cool. That's not your role. You don't want to play that. All good. But for me and those who want to do something, I'm about solutions, not just complaining.
Yeah. No, man, Michael Jackson, man, he said it best, one of the greatest musical artists of all time. He said, you want to make the world a better place, take a look in the mirror and make a change. And if everybody takes that approach, it's over.
Man in the mirror, reflection. It's funny how that works.
Yeah, we have created heaven on earth, man, if we do that. And he said it, you got to start with the man in the mirror, the woman in the mirror, the baby in the mirror. You got to start with that. If you can't start there, then you have nothing to say. So, and that's the key to it all, man. You know, my man KRS, the great KRS-One, he's like, All these people, I'm so-and-so, I'm this, I'm that. But it's all just whack.
Whack.
Yeah, it is. You know, so it's like you're thinking you're this, you're that, but we all one in the same. And so we realize that, man, we'll be constantly be under rule by people who don't like us or care about us and want to actually depopulate us. Honestly, you know? So yeah, that's the thing, man. So I've been blessed, man, to be able to surround myself more so with like-minded people that understand these things and that are about family, about community. I love where I'm at. And it's just God's blessings, man.
Nah, for sure, man. And, you know, it's all about being around like-minded individuals. That's how you grow. That's how you become motivated. That's how you get to a place where you can continue to, you know, do the things that you may not be able to do when you have somebody that's keeping you down and there's negative energy. A lot of us just don't understand the power of negativity and positivity, right? When you're around negativity a lot, you could be the strongest person in the world. I promise you that it is going to affect you.
Absolutely.
One way or another, the negativity is going to get you. It's going to catch you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, the rhythm is going to get you. But what I'm saying is, like, that negativity is going to get you. Like,
yeah.
It's real, and we really have to start moving in a way, I don't want to say militant, but moving in more of a way that has purpose and that has meaning, because a lot of us are not doing that. We're not doing that. So I definitely agree with what you were saying when it comes to being around like-minded individuals, for sure. So now we're almost at the finish line. And I always like to end the episodes with my guests giving their closing remarks, and then I close it out. So, Mr. Gray, share your final thoughts.
I just want to say, man, in closing, that this, again, once again, is a great honor, a great blessing and opportunity for you sharing the platform, for me to just share my story. And I can't tell you how great I think it is what you're doing, man, because this is very much needed, especially in this day and time. So I just want you to understand how much I'm supporting, how much I pray for success in your project, man. And I just want it to have the maximum impact to the exponential extent that it can, because I know what you're doing is powerful. I know the impact it's actually having on me, because listening to your podcast and your subject matters has got me to reflect on things and take a different approach in how I handle my day-to-day situations.
That's dope.
So it doesn't matter how old or young you are, man. This is going to have a positive impact if you pay attention and really do a self-analysis based on what you're dropping here. So I just congratulate you, man, and I just wish you unlimited, infinite success. What you're doing, man, because I know it's going to have a very tremendous impact on the world. So continue, man. Continue.
Nah, thank you. I really appreciate that. I'm humbled by your words, and it's not easy doing all this stuff. Now, it's easy being who I am, right? It's easy to talk and put my message out there and my words. That's easy. But everything that goes into this process, like, it's not that easy. And me getting laid off a few months ago and people looking at me and saying, oh, are you okay? Everything good? And I'm like, yo, I'm fine. That was a kick in the behind that I needed to get to this place to do this. And I could have easily gotten another job in corporate America and made even more money easily with my skill set and my experience. But I had the balls to say, nah, I ain't doing corporate America anymore. I'm investing in myself. I'm taking a chance on myself. And that's not easy to do. There's a lot of barriers that we put in our minds and we're scared because there's uncertainty there. When you work in corporate America and you're making good money, that's consistent. Although, like in my example and many other people, you can get laid off easily because we don't own that business. They can do whatever they want. But like I said, I'm investing in myself and I'm not wasting my gifts anymore. So my message to those who are listening, if you have any passions, anything that you love, any gifts, don't waste them. Take a chance on yourself. And I know that that's easier said than done. Believe me, I understand it. I've been through a lot of crap over the last decade. And I have so many reasons to just say, nah, I don't care. I'm not doing this. I think that I have a voice. I think that I have thoughts that people could benefit from. But nah, I'm not doing it because it's too difficult and I don't know what's going to happen. I have responsibilities. Believe me, I get it. I got bills too. I got a mortgage. I got all of that. Please believe I have all of that. Regardless if you have a 9-to-5, if you're a business owner, if you have a passion or something that you love, all I'm saying is don't ever lose sight of that. Hold on to that for dear life. And through all the loss that I've had, I realize that I have no idea how long I have left on this earth. And I guarantee you that before I die, my family, my friends, even people that may not even know me like that, they're going to remember my voice. They're going to remember my thoughts. And that's a fact. I don't care if it's one person, two people, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. Seriously, though, whatever happens to me during my journey, successful, unsuccessful, I live with that and I love that. And to be completely honest with you, I'll never be unsuccessful because success is subjective. And success to me means that I'm putting my message out there and I'm trying to help the world. That's success to me. Don't mean I got to make a ton of money. Nah, because that was never my foundation. That was never why I was doing this. You know what I mean? I'm going to be good regardless. So that's what I'm leaving y'all with today. Once again, Brian, I appreciate your words, your thoughts, your wisdom, your knowledge, your experience, and I thank you for sharing your story on my platform. And I don't know about all of y'all, but keeping it 100 and being true to yourself and not compromising who you are, well, that's another definition of a life that's worth living. I'm your host, Jay Smooth, and you just listen to The Life Unexamined is Not Worth Living. And we out of here. Peace.